I want to start with this billion-dollar diet business, and I'm also glad you studied psychology, because the reality is, for most of us, even if we find something that works for us, we're, you know, and it works great, and we feel better, and we're losing weight, invariably we go right back to our food passions. So what I want to know, have you either found a way to get us to stick to it, or even better than that, if you found a way to get us to like what's good for us?
Right. Well, I'm not sure from that question which direction you want me to go in, the psychology direction or the food direction, but maybe I'll pick it up right slap in the middle with food addiction. And we know that there is the food, you know, I don't need to tell you the connection between overweight and dieting problems and food addiction, of course. But what people often don't realize is there is a strong connection between being intolerant of a food and being addicted to it. I'm not just going to use the word food allergy, because one of the things that I've written about in DietWise is, well, you know, we used to think of a lot of things of food allergy. I mean, we didn't necessarily establish antibodies, but we knew it was making the person sick, so we just used this broad generic term, food allergy. Some of it was genuine allergy, of course, but nowadays science has moved on, and we understand that quite a lot of this phenomenon is genetic intolerance, minor sort of tiny variations in genes that we call SNPs, or single nucleotide polymorphs. Just means little variations, just enough that you don't suit a tomato quite as well as the next guy, or milk, or bananas, or whatever it is, just doesn't suit you quite so well. So people don't tolerate the food. So it's not necessarily an allergy, but it's definitely a phenomenon. You know, it doesn't suit you.
Right.
Well, the fascinating thing is that people often get hooked on their allergy foods, these bandit foods, as I sometimes like to call them. And a person can actually, it can turn out to be foods that a person's eating every day. The person might even feel that they're better. You know, for example, an Englishman, you'll very often hear the expression, oh, I like a cup of tea, it really calms me down and soothes my nerves. Well, I know right away that tea is winding up his nerves, stressing the person so that they're getting kind of withdrawal symptoms, so that when they have another fix of this particular food, then they calm down and they feel better. So it's a genuine addiction phenomenon. You know, in medicine, an addiction means you get withdrawal symptoms. If you give it up, something unpleasant happens that drives you back to wanting to take it. And you know, this is so common. You know, Rolly, I'm on record with the BBC as saying everyone has a food allergy.
I believe
going
it.
Back 25 years. and they didn't believe me. They actually sent microphones down on the street and stopped people. And actually, 18 out of 20 they stopped said, yes, of course I do. It's just a question, you know, you have to ask the right question, that's all. But once you ask the right question, it's very common indeed.
What's the right question?
Sorry?
Give it to me in the right question. What's the right question?
Really, the connections between, for example, one of the very key questions that I always ask people is, do you get symptoms immediately after eating? It might seem very obvious, but I mean, it's so common that people, say, fall asleep after lunch.
Right.
They never think of that as a food intolerance, but in fact, it's something connected with the food that's putting them to sleep. But the best question is the one I was going on to, which is to say, you know, I was saying food allergy is very common. How common is it that when you wake up in the morning, you feel crabby, you feel tired and slow getting started and irritable? I mean, that's so common that people consider it normal. Well, I mean, it's not normal, it's pathological, but it is common. And that's a clear indicator of a food allergy. By the time you wake up and looking at breakfast, you've been off food 12, maybe 14 hours, you know, and that's more than enough to set up withdrawal symptoms. So the person feels pretty bad. And then when they have their breakfast fix, you know, they have their wheat or their dairy or their caffeine or sugar or whatever it is that they're eating at breakfast time, that relieves the symptoms. The symptoms clear within an hour, winds them up, and, you know, off they go for the day, and they feel okay until the next morning. So once you know the evidence and you know what to look for, it's very, very common indeed.
Well,
and of course, that's what leads people, that drives people to eat the wrong things. No matter how determined you are that you're not going to eat some starchy food, your body wants you to eat it because it thinks it needs it.
Before we even get to finding out what those allergies might be, which is not always as easy as it sounds, even if you've pinpointed it, what is it that sets up the craving? You mentioned wheat and dairy, and they're like number one and two on the list always. And there are many of us who, would kill for a pizza. It's just that simple. And is there something in the body that sets this up so that we're constantly defeating ourselves this way?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that we're searching for here is probably Hansellier's general adaptation syndrome, or GAS syndrome, as it's called. It was a pretty wild speculation in its first days, but I think now most people do accept it. And it works like this. When you meet something that your body doesn't like, it may be as bad as a poison or just some intermediate thing, but the body doesn't like it, you get what Sillier called an alarm phase. That's phase one. And, you know, most people, if they're sensible, will just avoid it at that time. But if you keep persisting, like, say, you're learning to smoke, you know, you really want to smoke because your body smokes. Everyone knows the first few cigarettes you feel green, you want to throw up, and it's definitely an alarm reaction. But if you persist, then the body will get adapted to it. So that's a kind of adaptation phenomenon. Now, let's say it was a food, you know, the kiddie was allergic to milk but made to eat milk all the time because mum kept saying, it's good for you, you've got to have your milk, all that calcium. So within a year or two, the kiddie is now adapted to milk. But really the process is continuing in an insidious way. So all the time it's wearing down resistance, and although the person appears to tolerate milk, they don't really. And within a few years, they've got asthma, or they've got migraines, or in the third and fourth decade, they get arthritis. And this is what it turns out to be, that it's the adaptation has begun to break down at that point. And Sillier called this stage three. Now, there's a stage four where the unpleasant symptoms that have returned actually get masked by eating the food. So it switches off the symptom. It mm-hmm. lowers the cortisol triggers, and the body is sort of comfortable with it for the moment. But if you go too long without, of course, then pretty soon the I want it signal switches back on. Just like heroin.
Yeah.
You know, and I've taken people off foods. You may have had friends who have experienced this, Rolly. They go off a certain food, and it's like cold turkey. They're so ill, they lie in bed shaking. It's just like a real, real drug addiction, but it's to a food. So it's the same mechanism that's driving us.
Absolutely. I believe this wholeheartedly. And so now, of course, the question is, the one we want to hear, oh, about 10 minutes is for the answer. The real question is, how long before that reaction subsides when you give up the food?
Right. Well, it's a sort of complex answer, and it isn't really. The first part is easy. If you abandon a food, you know, you're doing a cleansing program. We call it an elimination or exclusion program. It's very precisely timed, and it's typically 5 days. Now, it actually rests on having this substance in your bowel. While it's in the bowel, you're at risk of the withdrawal symptoms, but as soon as it empties out from your body, the withdrawal symptoms will disappear. And I can predict, and it used to seem like magic to patients, but I'd say you will wake up on the morning of the fifth day feeling a completely new person. No matter how rough it was, all your symptoms will clear and you'll feel great, unless you're constipated. You know, that
yeah, right.
case, it will take a bit longer.
Right. Now, that said, I can tell you, I've been there, done that. I've gotten to the point like maybe 30, 40 days, and I'm feeling like a new person. I'm feeling better than I've ever felt in my life, and I know I'm not alone. That's why I'm using me as an example. And then all of a sudden that where's the Pepsi and pizza kicks in. And what is it that lures us back other than maybe weak will?
Yeah, a weak will is part of it, but you know, it's not as simple as that. There are many triggers, but one of them I noticed over the years, I mean, I did a lot of research on this in the 80s, but one of them I noticed was chemical and other intolerances and reactions. A person could be perfectly fine on a food program, and they didn't eat wheat, and they felt fine without wheat, but they'd suddenly get hit by a bunch of chemicals, they'd feel sick, and the first thing they did was trigger the craving for the food that became irresistible.
Yes.
So that's one of the factors. You know, you have to warn people about things like smoking, traffic fumes, you know, not going near crop sprays, don't use cosmetics for the time being, because chemical reactions can trigger the food cravings. I noticed that.